As you start the meditation, remind yourself you have only one responsibility right now, and that's to be with the breath, to be with the body, in whatever way feels comfortable. Learning how to work with the breath, or work with the way you focus, so that it feels easeful, steady, pleasant. That's one way of making the work easier. It also makes the work more interesting. If it's just in, out, in, out, in, out, you get bored very quickly and are going to wander off someplace else. But if you take this as a challenge, how can I get the mind to settle down with the breath in a way that feels good, that feels nourishing for the body, so that I'm not stirring up unusual energies or clamping down too tight, or not drifting off? Those are the two extremes you want to avoid. So think of this as a puzzle you want to understand. And right there you've got what the Buddha calls are the four bases for success. There's the desire to do something, and then persistence, you really stick with it. Intentness, where you pay really careful attention to what you're doing, and then using your powers of analysis and ingenuity, teasing out the problem, coming up with new solutions and evaluating them. All these come under the heading of analysis. These are the four qualities that you need for the meditation to succeed. So you might want to look and see which ones are lacking. It's not normal that one or two may be stronger than the others, but you need them all. If there's no desire, you're going to be sitting here thinking of something else. You may have the desire, but you don't really stick with it. You start wandering off for that reason as well. Or if you're not paying careful attention, things slip into the mind and you suddenly find yourself way away, off in Antarctica, South Africa, who knows where, and have no idea how you got there. Or if you run up against a problem and don't want to have any way of figuring it out, then you get stuck there as well. So you need these four qualities to bring to your meditation. It's a common theme in Thailand that they take these four qualities and say, actually, it's not just a matter of succeeding in meditation. It's succeeding in anything in life. You're going to need these four qualities. You have to want to do whatever is involved, and you stick with whatever is involved, whatever is required. And you pay careful attention and figure out ways of doing it better and better. So the meditation depends a lot on your willingness to apply these qualities. It's not just a matter of getting instructions and going and following the instructions. And if they don't work, then it's a teacher's fault. That's not the way it works. You take the instructions, and if they don't seem to work quite right, you ask yourself, well, maybe I've misunderstood the instructions, or maybe I'm not applying them properly. Because after all, the problem is in your own mind. There may be some imperfections in the instructions, but then again, where are you going to get perfect instructions in life? You take what you've got and you learn how to make the best use of it. You're the one who's responsible for the meditation. As the Buddha once said, he's the one who points the way. But it's up to each of us to actually do the work. That's because he wasn't the cause of our suffering, so he can't solve the problem. If there was somebody else who was causing you to suffer, it would be up to that person to solve the problem for you. But that's not the case. We're each suffering because of our own ignorance, our own craving and clinging. Unfortunately, though, we have good qualities as well that we can draw on to solve the problem inside. So you want to bring your full attention to this. Try to figure it out. And if you don't seem to be getting anywhere, just stop and watch for a while. Just look, look, look at what's going on. And as you get more and more into the present moment, you want your awareness of the body in the present to be enlarged. One of the terms for concentration is the enlarged mind or the expanded mind. And here it really means that your awareness is alert throughout the body, from the top of the head down to the tips of the toes, all around, surrounding the skin. Because this larger sense of the body is a lot more solid than a one-pointed focus. If your concentration depends on being focused on one point, even the slightest distraction will knock you off. But if your framework is large, the things can come through and they don't knock you off. They're there, but you have your framework to surround them. And this way the mind gets a lot more solid. The Buddha talks about the mind as being like earth, or trying to develop a mind like earth. And this is one of the ways you do it. You make it large, put it in a position where it's not easily knocked over by things. And he describes it in two different contexts. One is, as you're sitting down to meditate, he says, make your mind like the earth. Whatever comes up, you don't react. Anything disgusting happens or anything unpleasant happens, you don't just run away, you sit with it. Just as when people throw disgusting things on the earth doesn't shrivel up or run away. This is not because the Buddha wants you to be totally non-reactive in your meditation, but he does want you to have the patience to watch things. And the more steady you can make your gaze, the more solid, and the more clearly you can see things. It's like running a scientific experiment. And if the equipment for the experiment is on a wobbly table, or if the table is in a wobbly building, you can't trust the results. You may get very precise numbers, but they mean nothing. Things have to be solid so that you can detect slight movements. And the movements really are in the things that you're measuring rather than in the equipment. So as we're sitting here with the breath, we want to be able to observe very carefully. So you're trying to make the mind as solid and non-reactive as the earth. And then when you see that something's wrong, you're acting not out of knee-jerk reactions, but you see it because you've been watching it very carefully. It's okay, this is wrong, this is not right, something's got to be done. Then you're acting from a much more solid place. The other time the Buddha talks about the mind being expansive like the earth is when you're meeting with difficult situations in life. People say horrible things to you, they lie about you, they say things specifically to hurt your feelings. Or they lie about people you love, they hurt people that you're concerned about, or they attack you physically, or you come up with just any kind of really severe pain. The Buddha says, make your mind like earth, large like the earth. With the earth, someone can come along and say, we're trying to make the earth be without earth, and they dig here and they spit there and they urinate here, and they just try to say, be without earth, be without earth. It just doesn't work. The earth is just so large and expansive. In the same way, you want your goodwill to be like the earth, large, expansive. And those two qualities go together, the strength of the solidity of the mind and the goodwill. Because if the mind feels really solid and secure, you don't feel threatened by other people's unkind actions, and you can still maintain goodwill for them. So as you're making your mind stronger here, remember, you're not the only person who benefits. You're putting yourself in a much greater position of strength, and the people around you can be relieved of your greed, aversion, delusion. But to maintain this strength, both of the goodwill and of your focus, you have to use your discernment. If you just will yourself, I'm going to be strong, 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 you find yourself breaking after a while. You have to know what your limits are. And in particular, you have to learn how not to place unnecessary burdens on yourself. If you're walking around with huge burdens on your shoulders, there's no way you're going to help anybody else. And after a while, you give up. You might want to help them, and you try to shoulder their burdens, and you collapse. So you have to look and see, what ways is the mind burdening itself? What things is it holding on to? This is why the Buddha has that teaching on not-self. He's not getting involved in the metaphysical issue of whether or not there is a self. He always avoided that issue. But he is interested in making us see that sometimes the things that we claim as being us or ours, we really have to let go of. I mean, death, of course, is the big teacher of not-self. You have to let go of your body, let go of all the people you've loved, things you love doing. At that point, you've got to drop everything. But it's good before then to learn how to drop selectively, see what things really are unnecessary, the ways of thinking you might have that weigh yourself down, the imperatives that keep yelling at you in your mind, telling you've got to do this, you've got to do that. And you wonder, well, where did that imperative come from? Who had that idea? And is it really necessary? Do I really have to do these things? Learn how to ask yourself that question. And dig around into some things that you may really hold tightly to see if they're placing unnecessary stress on the mind as well. So what this means is that to strengthen the mind requires a combination of concentration, this enlarged frame of reference, the enlarged awareness filling the body, and allowing the breath energy to flow freely and fill the body as well. As the Buddha said, when you get the mind in right concentration, the mind settles down, it develops a sense of ease, refreshment, rapture. And you want to spread that throughout the body to refresh it. The same way that you would knead water into dough, to moisten the dough so it's not so dry. The Buddha one time compared concentration to food and water for the mind. It's nourishment, gives you strength. But at the same time, you need your discernment to see where it is that you're placing unnecessary burdens on yourself. And when you detect them, learn how to drop them. The key here is learning how to see that they are unnecessary. So many times you feel, I've got to hold on to this, I've got to worry about that. But many times we take on much more than we really can. We take on responsibility for things that we're not really responsible for. We want to provide happiness for other people. Well, you can't provide happiness. You can provide support up to a point. But there are parts of people that you'll never be able to reach, just as there are parts of you that other people will never be able to reach, which is why those parts are the parts that are your real responsibility. You've got to look after those to make sure you're not causing unnecessary suffering deep down inside. So it's good to learn how to question the burdens you place on yourself. To what extent are they helpful for you or others, and to what extent do they accomplish nothing at all? And to what extent are you carrying these burdens around out of pride or a sense of exaggerated responsibility? That's a lesson that's sometimes hard to look at, but it's important to learn. Otherwise, you waste strength that you could be putting into much more useful areas, both for yourself and for others. So this is how you try to strengthen the mind, make it more and more like the earth, strong and forgiving. It's interesting that in the Pali language, the word for earth, kama, is related both to patience and tolerance and to forgiveness. Both the inner strength and then the goodness that you spread around to other people are intimately connected. And it's good to keep this image of the earth in mind. It's the compassion that comes with strength, and the strength that comes with concentration and discernment. These are things we can develop. So do your best to make the mind like earth.